It's 9 o'clock. Jim Davis and the Buckeye Boy, the Jim Davis Show from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios. Most trust name in automobiles. Got some thoughts about Grande Wildcard Weekend. Big surprises this past weekend. Broncos coaching search heads to Dallas today to talk to Dan Quinn, Cowboys DC, and Kellen Moore, the Cowboys offensive coordinator. You got both sides of it there. You got on this group of candidates, yeah, the only guy that's had head coaching experience in Dan Quinn, mm-hmm, taking the Falcons to the Super Bowl.
Also went to two as DC of the Seahawks.
Right.
That one didn't go very well. And the other one, they got Pete Carroll, you know.
Right. And then you've got, so you got the veteran guy.
Yeah.
And Dan Quinn, and then you got the young upstart in Kellen Moore, the hot shot young offensive mind. Which, do both those guys, mostly Kellen Moore, take a little hit after what happened with the Cowboys and the Niners?
Kellen Moore does.
Yeah.
A lot. Because while Mike McCarthy okays those plays as the head coach, Kellen Moore called some of those plays that just didn't work.
No, they did not. And then the debacle at the end of the game where we talked about this. Could Mike McCarthy get fired this week? And could they just say, hey, Dan Quinn, we want you to take mm-hmm. over as head coach? And if all the reports are accurate that Dan Quinn is the front runner, can the Broncos afford to wait around too long to hire Dan Quinn?
If I'm Jerry, who do I want, though?
Or does he feel like he could do? Does he feel like he could do better than Dan Quinn?
I don't know if he can. He may feel like he could. Those are two different answers, especially with Jerry
right.
Jones. I get this feeling that Jerry leans Kellen Moore's way. I mean, look how long he kept Jason Garrett around.
Yeah, it's true.
I just get a feeling that he's an understated Al Davis. It's offense. Got to throw the ball down the field. I get a little bit of that feeling from Jerry Jones.
And you look at how good their offense was this year, one of the very best in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They might say, let's continue that situation with Kellen Moore, but we'll continue it as him being the head coach of this football team.
I think Dak's
a relatively youngish guy. Kellen Moore, they're going to have these guys working together in tandem mm-hmm. for many years to come, that he may look at it that way.
A long shot is Dan is the head coach and Kellen Moore stays as OC.
I don't think
it works the other way around. I don't think Dan can. No, Dan Quinn's not going to want that.
Dan Quinn's going to have chances to go coach someplace as a head coach. So why would he stay there if he's not going to be the head coach? All right, it is Mav Day. We talk to CMU coaches and players. We start things out with the head coach of the Colorado Mesa women's basketball team, Taylor Wagner. Taylor, I appreciate the time.
You bet. How you doing?
Doing fine. I know your concern was that game against Metro where you hadn't played in, what, 19 days, 20 days, something like that? It had been a
26,
long...
26, yeah.
20, I'm sorry.
Month.
I was selling it short. 26 days that you hadn't played, and you were concerned about how your team might look, about how sloppy you might look, and particularly against a team like Metro State that's playing some really good basketball, and unfortunately, your team not as sharp as you were hoping they would be in that first game back in 26 days.
Yeah, we kind of came out... we just looked flat. You know, there wasn't that excitement, that energy that normally we have. And that second quarter is what really did us in. When they, you know, after the first, it was 15-10, and that second quarter, then they kind of jumped on us, and we even lost a little bit more life. And, going into the locker room, you could kind of tell, like, we just didn't have it. And, and then the second half was a little bit more of the same, and they just kind of put it on us.
You did a good job in terms of dominating them on the glass. You had the edge in rebounding. But I look at the free throw percentage. It's, you know, they were 18 for 33, but the number that stands out is not the makes that they had. They got the line 33 times in that game. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those games where we couldn't catch a break. They were really physical with us. It was one of those things where it seemed like we breathed on them. It was a foul, but looking back at the game and watching it a couple times, we just need to be more aggressive. We we were always a step behind them, and I think that was the difference in the game. We just really, you know, with a team like Metro, you've got to come out because they're going to play hard and they're going to play physical, and I don't think we responded like we should have.
Yeah, I don't want to get you in hot water with the RMAC. That's not my intention. But I look at the number, it's like, holy cow, they got the line 33 times. They hit 8 of 16 threes, and that was a big number and a big difference in the game as well, their ability to make some threes.
They did. They shot the ball well from everywhere. That's kind of what we talked about. You can't give them everything. And you know, they were scoring inside. They were hitting their outside shot. They got to the free throw line 33 times, so we really didn't have an answer anywhere on the floor, and you can't do that against good teams. You have to be able to at least take something away from them. And, you know, we just did a poor job that night.
Taylor Wagner, coach of the CMU women's basketball team. You wrapped up the weekend, though, on a very positive note with a 78-58 win over Colorado Christian. And you had to be thrilled with the way Sophie Anderson played. Career best, 18 points for her. 18 points, she had 4 assists. Mariah Martin, Danny Turner each had 22, but the job that Sophie did scoring the basketball, you had to, like I said, as much as she does the little things, being, you know, going to the glass hard, rebounding, playing tough defense, making that extra pass, it's rewarding to see a player like her get a chance to have a big offensive night like she did.
Yeah, I mean, usually she's doing all the dirty work, and she still did a bunch of that too, but she shot the ball well. Got to the free throw line for us and just had an all-around good game. And that's what I was hoping. We needed to see us respond as a team. You know, between her and Danny and Mariah, I mean, they all kind of stepped up offensively. And where the night before we couldn't find the bucket, they did it for sure against Colorado Christian.
Well, and certainly Metro State did a good job of putting the clamps on Mariah. She only had the 7 points, but as I mentioned, came back with the 22 against the Cougars. And was really effective from three-point range, 4 of 6. You guys went 10 of 22 from three-point range. So Mariah's output certainly helped for that big turnaround from the perimeter.
It sure did. You know, and I think when those girls hit those shots from the perimeter, it kind of takes a little pressure off of them. Things start to seem to open up a little bit more for them as well. And so, you know, hopefully moving forward, we were able to shoot that ball a little bit better from the three-point line.
Taylor Wagner, coach of the CMU women's basketball team with us. The Maverick basketball teams head to Colorado School of Mines for action on Friday and then Regis on Saturday. And you take on this Friday, Taylor, the number one team in the conference right now. Colorado School of Mines, they're 8-0. They're 13-1 on the season. And Denali Pinto, seems like she's been there, what, 20 years now? Something like that?
Yeah.
It seems like she's been there
forever.
A whole
bunch of them, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's why they play so well, is that, you know, they've got all this senior leadership on the floor that have been together and done a lot of good things, so they're playing at a high level right now.
Well, Pinto's been their leading scorer this season. She's having another outstanding year. She's averaging just under 13 points per game, and then a player that you and I have talked about a lot when we talk about the Ordigers, Courtney Stanton, is just brings physicality to the table for that basketball team.
Yeah, you know, their whole starting group, and some of the kids they bring off just are solid. You know, it's a team that defensively they're very sound. Offensively, they don't make mistakes. You know, each kid plays their role to a T, and they know what they need to do. And when they have opportunities, they make their shots. So, very seasoned group, determined too. I saw that last year from them, and you're starting to see it now, right now, where they're really focused and their play, you can see that every time they step out on the floor that they're coming after you.
Taylor Wagner, coach of the Colorado Mesa women's basketball team with us on the Team Sports Network. They had an outstanding year last year as well, Taylor. And you mentioned the veteran players they have like Denali Pinto and Courtney Stanton, but where have you seen maybe when you watch film an improvement in what they're doing last year as opposed to this year, an area, maybe it's in their half-court defense, maybe it's their perimeter play. Have you seen some areas improvement from the Ordigers team from last year's group?
Well, I mean, they're a great defensive team. I think their offensive rebounding has really picked up. They have the two best offensive rebounders in our conference. But not only those two, you know, but it's Van Sickle and Van de Graaff, but everybody else, I mean, they're just relentless on the boards. you never get a break from them. I think they've taken that to another level, and you know, more opportunities equals more points. Yeah, you get more wins. So I think that's probably the biggest area where they just kind of come after you and never give up.
Taylor Reitner, coach of the Maverick women's basketball team, with us on the Team Sports Network. And then it's Regis the next night, and Regis is right behind you in the standings. Mavericks are fourth in the conference, Regis fifth, and Josie Ryan's led the way for them this year. She's been averaging just under 13 points per game, and Tashika Burrell, she's been at around 11 points per basketball game. So those two have kind of set the pace from a scoring standpoint for the Rangers this season.
They have. You know, they're a different team. They've got a few more transfers that they picked up through the portal last year, a couple Division One, and then Josie Ryan is a Division Two transfer. She's done a really good job for them, kind of their leader out there. So you can see they've gelled really quickly. They're physical. You know, they had a chance to beat Mines a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it's always a tough game when we play them, and really spirited. So it'll be one of the things this weekend for our kids. We can't back down, and we're going to have to play 80 minutes of basketball and can't take possessions off.
Josie Ryan, for them, as I mentioned, their leading scorer. She's a transfer from Wayne State, Nebraska. So she has definitely stepped in and been effective for the Regis Rangers. Hey, I always appreciate the time, Taylor. Thank you so much. Of course, we'll have coverage of the Maverick women along with the men at Colorado School of Mines. Ethan Jordan will have it for you both nights. Of course, we'll have Friday's action on the Team CMU Sports Network women's pregame at 5:15. They'll tip it at 5:30, followed by the men. And then on Saturday, because of NFL playoff football, over on 1100 KNZZ, same times for the games with Colorado Christian. Taylor, appreciate it. Thank you so much, and best of luck this weekend.
Thank you.
All right, Taylor Reitner, coach of the CMU women's basketball team. So just like sort of a quick reminder, Friday night, right here on the team for the Mavericks and Colorado School of Mines, Saturday, 1100 KNZZ, 92.7 FM for the Maverick basketball games at Regis. All right, text or call us, 970-242-1340. Do we get a winner yet, by the way?
We have not gotten a winner. We're getting close. We've had guesses for Varsity Blues, Friday Night Lights, and the Tooth Fairy. One of those is closer than the other two. And I'm looking for this sports movie.
Counter on one, ready.
Let's give you that again.
23 counter on one, ready.
It's obviously a football movie.
And we talked about the star of this movie.
Yes.
He's not in that clip, though.
No, who was an ancillary football player himself back in the day. As in not starting.
And still has
interest.
His fingers?
Yeah.
In the professional football world?
Yeah, you're about knuckle deep right now.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. So, first correct answer, win that small antipasto salad from Junction Square Pizza at 7th and Main. All right, so text in 970-242-1340. Got one from RJ in Delta listening on 102.1 FM. Good morning, RJ. Jim, Buckeye believe if Mike McCarthy is fired by Jerry Jones, he'll choose Kellen Moore, not Dan Quinn. My guess, it's either Dan Quinn or Hackett to the Broncos.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen RJ's text, and I agree. I just get that feeling Jerry Jones is going to want the offensive guy.
It makes sense that he would go down that road. He'd want to make his highly paid quarterback happy. Keeping Kellen Moore would certainly do that with Dak Prescott. From our good friend Guru Gary, P1er Guru Gary.
Yes.
I wonder if George Payton's really enamored with Kenny Pickett, as I've heard. We will see. I also wonder if in the interview process, the most asked question is, you getting Rodgers?
Right.
Could see why you'd want to ask that question. Let's see. Got one from Rolled Tacos. I do not hate the Cowboys, but I always celebrate the day that they will no longer be on national TV for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. He's killing me, too, with that picture this morning.
It's a good-looking Rolled Taco, some guac, sour cream on there, the cheese.
Oh. Yeah.
Is it just me, or does Tony Romo sound like a guy you accidentally got into a conversation with at a party who turns out to be a coked-up loser that can't shut the hell up? Also, the Tampa Bay Bucks defense stopped Casey in the Super Bowl last year. Why aren't the Broncos interviewing Todd Bowles? Good question. Why wouldn't they interview Todd Bowles? They should.
The guy that's done it.
Brian Daboll.
Say what you want with the Jets, but
they should be on that list, and they're not. Yeah. They're not. Did you catch Drew Brees doing his first ever NFL game?
I heard. I watched a lot of that game Saturday. Yeah, he was all right.
He's getting ripped by a lot of people. That there were moments where he really didn't add much to the conversation, did not really help out Mike Tirico a whole lot. It probably wasn't fair to him that he got thrown into his first NFL game without a whole lot of actual color analyst experience. He did some Notre Dame football.
I didn't hear a ton wrong with him Saturday, right?
I got the feeling that he was nervous. That he was nervous.
Who wouldn't be?
There were moments that you kind of expected more insight. I didn't think he was dumpster fire horrible.
No.
You could tell though he was raw.
Right.
He's green and they probably rushed him into that situation.
And they probably did, but I'm still fine with it. I mean, it's Drew Brees. You hired him to NBC Sports for a reason. This is one of those reasons. You have a playoff game. Tirico is fantastic. Tirico is absolutely incredible. He's very underrated, I think, at everything he does.
Yeah,
but he's great.
Extremely good.
And, you know, sometimes we tell young broadcasters, if you don't have anything to add between certain plays, don't say anything. Don't sound dumb. Just be silent. If you don't have anything to add, don't try to throw something out there, because you got a game to call if you're the play-by-play guy.
And I agree with you to a point. Those guys are not Drew Brees. Those guys have not been in the fire, could talk coverages, could talk about situations. There were times he deferred a lot to Mike Tirico on that.
Yeah.
That's where Tirico, I'm sure, is, Drew, I want you to, this is your wheelhouse. This is why you're here. And I think it's more that I think he could be really good down the road. It's just he doesn't have a lot of experience doing it. And I think that he was kind of taking the approach, like you said, if I don't know what I want to say here, so I'm just going to shut up
and
get out of his way.
I think people underestimate how hard it is and how little time you actually have between plays to try to put in your nuggets of information. When you're trying to break down coverages and you're talking about, well, you got this and this and then this, you got maybe 8-10 seconds sometimes between plays that to break that down, and he may not be able to do that just yet.
Right. And I think that it's probably unfair for those like, oh, I should never do it again. No, he wasn't that bad. He just hasn't got the reps. Like anybody in any profession, the profession he was in, like playing quarterback, you gotta get reps.
Right.
And probably the fact that he didn't get more reps other than doing Notre Dame football. Mm-hmm. And I know he probably went home and he practiced, and Tirico and him probably spent some time doing a little bit of a mock game.
Right.
I would think that they probably found some time to do that. That it's, we've heard worse, we'll put it that way, than Drew Brees the other day.
And I know what you're saying about he's been in the fire as a quarterback. He's been a broadcaster for 11 months.
Yeah.
I just think that
you want more than what you got from him. Mm-hmm. And I think in time you probably will get that.
Yeah, and I'm fine with how he did. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, he just seemed nervous to me. That was my biggest thing was, man, he seems really nervous.
Yeah, and it's his first NFL game is a playoff game. He's on national TV with one of the best to do it on an over-the-air channel. I'd be nervous as hell, too. I'd be thrown up on my shoes.
Oh, absolutely. He'd be absolutely scared to death.
It's a different – it's not something he's mastered yet. And he should be nervous.
He's a likable guy. He's a smart guy.
He'll be fine.
He will be fine. If you're judging him on that one game, his first game ever, as an analyst in an NFL game, that's unfair.
Right.
That's unfair to a guy like him.
And it's one of those things to where it's like being a GM or a coach or whatever. Great player doesn't always immediately translate into great something else.
No.
Peyton and Eli have room to breathe on their broadcast. That's what makes it fun and entertaining. Troy Aikman has Joe Buck to work with, which Joe Buck is a little Pat Summerall-ish with you know, very minimal painting.
Right.
And Troy Aikman's got room to work. Tirico's a little more wordy, and that's not the guy he's worked with. It's, you know, it'll
take some time. Drew was on the Manning cast, right?
He might have been.
He might have been. I mean, like you said, that's a different. People say, well, look how good Peyton and Eli are. Like you said,
they're not doing play-by-play.
No, they're just talking. They're talking about formations. Mm-hmm. They're talking strategy.
They're watching film.
There's no first down and 10 at the 25. There's no setting where the line of scrimmage is. It's them. It's a video medium where they're able to comment on what they're seeing.
Yep.
And you can see, so you don't need somebody to tell you, well, it's first and 10 at the 25-yard line. You don't need somebody to do play-by-play for you.
Manningcast wouldn't work on radio.
No, it would not. It would not work at all.
Absolutely not.
I thought this was funny. I found this online on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Playoff wins in the last 25 years. This is for Cowboy fans out there.
Yep.
Jake Delhomme, 5 playoff wins. Trent Dilfer, 5 playoff wins. Mark Sanchez, 4 playoff wins. Brad Johnson, 4 playoff wins. Colin Kaepernick, 4 playoff wins. Dallas Cowboys, quarterbacks, plural, 3. So you've had more wins from not exactly a household name in Jake Delhomme, Trent Dilfer, Mark Sanchez, Brad Johnson. And Kaepernick.
I love those numbers, too, to needle Cowboys fans, but since I live with one, I try to also bring in a little bit of defense, as in all of those guys combined have 3 fewer Super Bowl wins than the Cowboys. So there is that. I understand. Last 25 years, not great, but the first 40?
Pretty good.
Pretty damn good.
I'll agree with you on that. Pretty good.
I mean, 3 and 4 years is not bad.
All right, 922, Chuck Pfeiffer. CMU wrestling coach is coming up next, so we'll talk with Chuck. Also, Mike DeGeorge, Maverick men's basketball coach, later on this hour. Text or call the show, 970-242-1340.
Good morning, gentlemen. What are the haps?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Talking Colorado Mesa sports on Mav Day on The Jim Davis Show.
On the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, he's the coach of the CMU men's wrestling team, Chuck Pfeiffer, with us. Good morning, Chuck.
Jim.
Thanks for coming on today, Chuck.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. Your team went out to Louisville, Kentucky, to the NWCA National Duels here recently. First time ever to go out there and compete in that at the Kentucky International Convention Center. 6th place finish for the Mavs, so a good couple of days out there at Louisville for your Maverick wrestling team.
You know, we wrestled really well. I mean, you know, we had a good first win against Mercyhurst, you know, dominated the duel, really. And, in fact, all the duels we won, we pretty much dominated. And then, you know, losing to 2 teams that, you know, number one ranked UCO, which is University of Central Oklahoma. And then we lost for 5th and 6th to McKendree, which is ranked number 3rd in the country. So really, when you look at how it bracketed out, if you lose in the earlier round, the best that you can get is actually 5th. So you can't really work back and get 3rd. But how it was bracketed, I thought we wrestled real well, you know, missing a few guys, which every team is with everything that's kind of going on right now. But, you know, guys wrestled well, and it was really a fun event. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, CMU Wrestling can attend that every year, because it's really good to see that competition and wrestle those teams. You know, would have liked to seen St. Cloud. I think they're ranked number 2, but that's just how it bracketed out. And the guys wrestled well and really responded right there after Christmas.
Yeah, a number of outstanding performances. Among them was Donnie Negus, who was named the Wrestler of the Week after competing at the duels in Louisville, Kentucky. He went 4-1. As I mentioned, helped you guys to a 6th place finish in your first ever appearance at the National Duels. He won a couple by pin against Mercyhurst and Fort Hays, had a major decision victory against number 3 McKendree's wrestler, and then the win over UNC Pembroke. So Donnie Negus with a weekend that gets some recognition by the RMAC for his outstanding time in Louisville.
You know, Donnie's wrestling real well, and, you know, he's came off a great year of being an All-American for us last year, and, you know, obviously our highest placer right now, and, you know, kind of riding on him a little bit. He's, you know, in his 6th year, and one of those older guys that you kind of, you know, put on the old man program a little bit sometimes, and, you know, have him do some different things. Don't run him like you do some of the other guys in that, and he's doing real well. And the one match that he lost, he wrestled the number one ranked kid in the country and really wrestled him well, wound up losing 2-1 and, you know, had our shots there, but wrestled him super well and real proud of Donnie. And he definitely deserved our MAC Wrestler of the Week for sure.
Chuck Pfeiffer, coach of the CMU men's wrestling team, with us on the Team Sports Network. And then you had some of your wrestlers that didn't go to the duels out in Louisville that went to the Western Colorado Open up in Gunnison. And tell us about that a little bit. Some of those guys got a chance to compete up in Gunnison.
You know, it's a good open that Western hosts there on that Friday. You know, a bunch of our young guys, some backup guys and all that, wrestled in that. And, you know, got a couple winners, some red shirt kids. You know, Braden Baumgartner and Oren Huff both won the tournament. So super proud of those guys going up there and getting some matches in. And then we also had some guys out in Kentucky. They actually ran an open along with the duels. And, you know, we had, I think, three placers out there with Dylan Ranieri placed second. Cash Anderson won the tournament. And then also Ben Roebuck placed in the top six there. So, you know, it was a good weekend of wrestling for us, and the guys really wrestled well. I mean, just, you know, any guy that was healthy and able to wrestle could have wrestled that weekend for sure.
Chuck Pfeiffer, coach of the Maverick men's wrestling team, with us on the Team Sports Network. And now for Maverick fans, a chance to watch your wrestling team on the mats over Brownson Arena coming up tomorrow night at San Francisco State, and then Shadron State on Friday. So, Chuck, let's start out with San Francisco State. Give us some insight into that team that you'll face tomorrow.
You know, San Francisco, you know, obviously they didn't wrestle at all last year. So, you know, he's kind of in a rebuilding phase right now and doing a good job. Jason Welch, actually All-American for Northwestern. You know, his coach and that team is doing a great job there. And his kids look good and everything. But like I said, they're kind of on a rebuilding year. Last year they were completely out of competition and that. So, but, yeah, that'll be a good duel starting at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. And looking forward to wrestling them. And then, you know, we've got Shadron with a double duel on Friday evening. The women will wrestle at 5:30 and we'll, or at 5, and we'll wrestle at 6:30. So looking forward to that as well.
A chance to watch both Maverick wrestling teams Friday over at Brownson Arena. And then, of course, we'll talk more about it when we get closer. But January 27th, CSU Pueblo, the Bank of Colorado battle in Brownson, always one of those matches that you mark on your calendar for the Maverick wrestling team. Always a great environment when it's the battle in Brownson.
You bet. It'll be great. And, you know, always love to bring, you know, my alma mater in here for that duel. And it's a good atmosphere for sure, and looking forward to it. Pueblo's wrestling pretty well right now, and definitely looking forward to that duel, and should have a great crowd for that. I mean, it always is, and really looking forward to it.
All right, tickets sell out fast for that, so make sure you get to the Maverick website to get your tickets for the Battle of Brownson. But don't forget San Francisco State tomorrow over at Brownson, 6 o'clock, and then both Maverick wrestling teams against Shadron State. Women, once again, at 5 o'clock for that one on Friday, Chuck?
Yes, it is. 5 o'clock and 6:30 for the men.
All right, so get over and support both Maverick wrestling teams coming up on Friday. Chuck, I always appreciate it. Thanks for coming on today.
You bet. Thank you much, Jim. You bet.
Take care. Chuck Pfeiffer, coach of the CMU men's wrestling team. All right, Mike DeGeorge, Maverick men's basketball coach, in just a little bit as the Mavericks go to Golden, take on Mines on Friday, Regis on Saturday. Mike DeGeorge coming up in just a little bit. Text or call us, 970-242-1340. Chick-fil-A breakfast team phone line, serving your breakfast now until 10:30 at the Rimrock store. 970-242-1340. Got some thoughts about Wild Card Weekend. Let's see. Got one from Matt. Even though we have a good defense and needs an enticing and defensive-minded coach, do you think we need to go with an offensive-minded coach to fully bolster the offense, or the quarterback, of course? Or do you think it's more important to go with a bright offensive coordinator? That's a good question, Matt. Dan Quinn brings experience, and he's guided, as you referenced, a couple of Super Bowl defenses when he was with the Seattle Seahawks with Pete Carroll.
He's been a coordinator or a coach in 3 Super Bowls in the last 10 years.
So there's the experience there that nobody else in this field has right now.
The only one that even comes close is Doug Peterson.
Right, and we don't even know if they're going to talk to Doug Peterson. Right. We've heard that they will, but we don't know. But he's
There's
the only other
official yet. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the only other guy that
so
would be.
So the ones actually on paper, it's Dan Quinn and everybody else.
Everybody else looking for their first head coaching job. I could see where Hackett would be intriguing with Getsy as his offensive coordinator. And I'm trying to exclude the Rodgers thing. Mm-hmm. You can't count on that. You can't. Once again, if you're going to hire Nathaniel Hackett, mm-hmm. it better be because you really like his leadership style. Because what's the thing George Payton talked about? Looking for somebody to be a leader.
Right.
And the offensive mind to go along with it.
And as the offensive coordinator under an offensive-minded head coach with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, how much are you actually leading? You know, it's Eric Bieniemy, it's Byron Leftwich, it's the same conversation. You know, the O'Connells, the Callahans. How much are you actually doing? There's 6, 7 chicken and egg options on this list, and I just don't understand how you can parse one from the other, right? At least we can't, because we're not in the room. But if you love, like, Hackett's leadership, what exactly is he doing in Green Bay to lead that offense who the head coach calls the plays and your quarterback is Aaron Rodgers?
So it's hard to screw that up, right?
Yeah. Right. It's not like guiding Nick Foles to a Super Bowl. And I know I people are probably banging their head against the steering wheel that I keep bringing up Doug Peterson, but or Dan Quinn. You know, Matt Ryan and the offensive coordinator, was that Shanahan at the time? Another Broncos miss?
Yeah, it was Kyle Shanahan, yeah.
You know, the offense in Seattle got to back-to-back. I think that was the last team to do it, even. Maybe the Patriots did it. Maybe they went to 3 in a row. I don't know. I don't remember right off the top of my head. But, you know, Dan Quinn's got the proverbial dirt in his spikes, right? He's been there twice as a defensive coordinator. He won one as a defensive coordinator against, I think, is still the most prolific offense in NFL history. Sorry to bring it up, but it's true. Then he lost the next one, which they had a chance to beat Tom Brady, but Pete Carroll somehow screwed that up offensively. And then Tom Brady did him again as head coach of the Falcons. But he's not a chicken and egg guy. He actually has this experience. He has led at the top levels, coordinator and coach, two different teams to 3 separate Super Bowls. You know, Hackett may be a great leader of everybody else on that offense, not named Aaron Rodgers. Or, you know, Bieniemy with Mahomes. Or Leftwich with Tom Brady. Where did these guys' influence start on these teams? I don't know that.
Well, just look at what Hackett did when he was with Jacksonville. 2017 is when they went to the AFC Championship game mm-hmm. with Blake Bortles as their quarterback. They finished, trying to look, find the numbers here. Jacksonville finished with a top 10 offense. Most of that was their running game. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily their passing game. They finished 17th in passing that year with Blake Bortles. But they had one of the best rushing attacks in the league that year.
Yeah. They were, I think...
They were the number one rushing team in the league that year.
Mm-hmm. Middle of the pack, passing the ball, like you said, but they had a top-end defense. Like, top two. They were number 2 in defense, in yards allowed and points scored, and their passing defense was incredible in a passing league. You know, so...
They had Leonard Fournette that had 1,000 yards.
Yeah, you know...
But you look at Bortles' numbers, 3,687... 21 touchdowns, 4 picks. No, 4 touchdowns. Excuse me, 4 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Excuse me. Those are not very sterling numbers.
No. No, his touchdown to interception ratio wasn't great. You know, they didn't ever have to come back. I think he only had 1 fourth quarter comeback in that season where they won 10 games. His rating was under 90. His QBR was under 60. And it's not like he was running for his life. He got sacked 24 times in 16 games. You know, the offense, the quarterback, which is what the Broncos are really going to need you to develop if you're Nathaniel Hackett, as with Blake Bortles, the quarterbacking play was eh. Well, with Aaron Rodgers, it's good, and there's a difference between those two guys.
So you're looking at a quarterback in Blake Bortles that 4 touchdowns to 13 interceptions. You go to his time when he was with Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks there didn't have a lot to work with. E.J. Manuel, remember E.J. Manuel?
Yeah.
And Thad Lewis and Jeff Toole, they were 29th in passing, but they had a pretty strong running game with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kyle Orton took over, and their passing offense picked up. So in that case, maybe it's a situation where we're talking about Blake Bortles and E.J. Manuel.
My question
where
is,
maybe he didn't have a whole lot to work with, so he leaned on, like any smart OC, mm-hmm. I'm going to lean on the strength of my football team, which is running the football.
He went from 27th in points scored in the league to 3rd. 24th. You know, and when he was with the Bills, it was 22nd and then 12th. And then he moved to Jacksonville where he was 27th, then 3rd. 3rd is good, then 24th. There are 3 seasons in the 20s and 1 in the top 10 before he gets to Aaron Rodgers. That's not a great offensive resume. I know he didn't have a lot to work with, but you would think that if, hey, I can lay on the strength of my offense, it would be a little bit better in some of those other seasons, and it's not.
Yeah, and he obviously had Leonard Fournette, who eventually ended up being taken out the scrap heap by the mm-hmm. Bucks, but that was Leonard Fournette at his best in a Jacksonville uniform.
Yeah.
And that defense had a lot to do with it, too. That
a lot of those same guys.
Glenn Campbell, Ramsey, those guys, they got them to the AFC Championship game.
You know, a lot of those same guys went from almost dead last to 3rd to back in the 20s on the offense. Blake Bortles, that year after he had that good season, you know, 21-10 or 21-13, whatever it was, he went 13-11, touchdowns and interceptions. He came back to the pack immediately. In 13 games, it's not like he was just kind of out there half the time. His numbers aren't great, even including that good year.
Which he put up a lot of numbers previously, where they were behind in games and he had to throw the football, and so he got to get to pad his stats a little bit. And that was a year where they didn't have so much of that. He had a good year yardage wise, didn't have a good year, at least the numbers I saw. In terms of touchdown interception ratio.
No, 2017, he had 21 touchdowns, 4% on the touchdown percentage.
I'm sorry, I think I misspoke on the numbers.
I saw the same number, and I had to look a second time. I'm like, it's 4%. That's not great.
Okay, yeah.
Your elites are... 21
touchdowns, what? How many years interception? 13.
That's not good.
It's not horrible, but it's not great. I'm sorry, I misspoke on those numbers.
I misread it. A lot of numbers. And reading and, you know, the whole thing.
Reading is fundamental.
Yeah. You know, but, like, that year, his rating wasn't very good. His QBR wasn't very good, which is independent, right, of how the rest of the offense plays. Just knock my
mind. But Hackett defenders would say, well, he still, though, was able to coach him up to the point where he was not a liability.
Once out of 3 seasons.
Yeah, I want to defend Hackett in that he didn't have a whole lot to work with and took chicken poop and made chicken salad out of it, but then those other years.
And now
reference,
the last 3 years, he's had filet mignon and just hasn't burned it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
exactly. I mean, how do you screw this up when you got Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah,
and you got a guy like Matt LaFleur that is one of the best young head coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 9:42. Mike DeGeorge, CMU men's basketball coach, will join us in just a moment. This day in sports history, 1960, with a goal and an assist and a win over the Blackhawks. Gordie Howe becomes the NHL's all-time leading scorer with 947 career points. 1966, Chicago's granted NBA expansion franchise, which would become the Bulls. 1966, Bobby Hull becomes the first player in Blackhawks history to score 300 career goals. 1970, Curt Flood files a lawsuit challenging baseball's reserve clause. That suit would eventually pave the way for free agency. 1972, the Cowboys beat the Dolphins 24-3 to win the Super Bowl. Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach is named the game's MVP. Also, 1988, the NFL St. Louis Cardinals announce they're moving to Phoenix. And 2019, Steph Curry becomes the first player in NBA history to hit 8 or more 3-pointers in 3 consecutive games. Also on this day, 2020, Carlos Beltran is let go as a manager of the Mets before he manages a single game to the fallout of the Astros cheating scandal. Beltran was a player on the Astros when the cheating occurred.
Those were back in the days when there was actually baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
I long for those days.
Yeah, it's not looking very encouraging, is it, with the recent meetings between both sides?
Can we at least get this deal done? I don't care for the players or the owners or it, at least so I have more Guardians gear to pick from. Just, you know, get that done. Come on.
Yeah, just so you
help
have
a brother out.
More choices.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. 9:43, Mike DeGeorge, Simeon's basketball coach, joins us next on The Jim Davis Show.
First of all, it's hilarious.
Warp twisted individuals. Yes.
Yeah!
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Talking Colorado Mesa men's hoops with Mavs coach Mike DeGeorge on The Team.
Welcome in, Jim, on the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. And with us right now, he's the head coach of the Maverick men's basketball team, Mike DeGeorge. Mike, good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, Jim.
Yeah, the six-game winning streak come to an end, boy, in heart-breaking fashion. I know you've been on the wrong side and the right side of some of those kind of victories, but that had to be one of the tougher ones to see with the way you lost to Metro State on Friday.
Yeah, obviously it's hard to have a kid throwing a 75-pointer, but you know there were so many things leading up to that too. That if any one of them go differently, we win the game. And so I really was proud of our guys. I thought we competed the right way. You know, we had some kind of odd defensive breakdowns in that game that we normally don't have that hurt us throughout the game. But when I really went back and watched the film, you know, we executed at a high level and put ourselves in a good position to win the game and just. You know, a lot of kind of tough breaks at the end of regulation and overtime. So, but, you know, I think we're getting there, and that's a very talented team. And you know, it is what it is. Some of those things sometimes are outside of your control.
Yeah, Tyler Randall with the basically, you know, half-court, three-quarter court chuck to win the game in overtime, 85-84. And I think you have to be pleased with the way your team played against Metro, considering the last time you faced them, and that was a game I know that you were disappointed, your guys were as well, the way you played at Metro State at the Orrery Event Center, had to be happy, even though it was a loss, to play a more competitive game, a game where you certainly had chances to win that game against Metro.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the big takeaways against Metro is they just didn't guard us on the perimeter at their place, and then we would just, instead of just shooting it when we were open and they would just really kind of what we call short closing. They wouldn't close all the way out to shooters. They would just sort of stop at about 15 feet and still just kind of contain the drive. And in that game, just repeatedly, we would just put the ball on the floor right into, you know, kind of a double team rather than just taking what the defense was giving us. And so, you know, it's been kind of a common plan against us. We do attack the paint so well that the teams are sort of just loading up against us and giving us shots. And, you know, I thought this weekend was good. We, you know, we shot 43s against Metro and only made 15, but it's still a good percentage when you know, for you to win the game. And then the next night we shot it well and shot it with confidence. And so, you know, taking 63s in a weekend is probably a record for us. But it's something we need to be doing with this group is really catching it ready to shoot when we start to gain an advantage on offense. And so that was good. And you know, so I think we're trending in the right direction. We're kind of figuring out our identity and feel good about this group and what we can do moving forward.
Yeah, and shooting the three against Metro State, Reese Johnson had a really good game. He had 5 threes in that game. You mentioned you made 15 threes in that loss to Metro State. Trevor Baskin had a couple of threes, 24 points, and then 22 the next night against Cuddleberg Christian, coming off the 32-point career best performance at Black Hills State. He was named the RMAC Offensive Player of the Week, and boy, nobody has been on fire like Trevor Baskin's been.
Yeah, it's fun to watch Trevor's growth. I mean, he's really sort of emerging into the player that we all can see that he's going to become. And so it's exciting that we're kind of at that stage. And the big thing for him is, you know, there have been times where his confidence gets really high and then it wanes a little bit. And when his confidence wanes, it's not that he doesn't play confident. He just gets a little indecisive. So it's just been great to just see how decisive he's being. When he sees an angle, he takes it, and just being really aggressive. And so, you know, hopefully he can just continue that trend.
Mike DeGeorge, coach of the CMU men's basketball team, with us. And then you wrapped up the weekend over Browns and Mike with an outstanding win against Colorado Christian, put up over 100, a 101-66 win over Colorado Christian. Mentioned Trevor Baskin, another great game. Actually, I think I said 22, 23 points for him in the game against Colorado Christian. Mac Reniker, 18 points, 7 boards in that game. He had a 14-point game from Reese Johnson as well, 16 from Blaze Threet. It seems like Blaze really, going back to that Black Hill State game, and you had to do that more out of necessity than anything. Blaze seems like he's kind of thriving in that role coming off the bench.
Yeah, I do think it's good for Blaze. I mean, I'm sure he'd prefer to start. But, you know, one is this team's been pretty egoless. They don't really seem to care who starts. And, you know, we've been shuffling lineups all year, partially just because we wanted to create an environment where it doesn't matter. Let's just, you know, figure out how to come off the bench, how to start, do all those different things. But I do think for Blaze it's good to let him see how the game is sort of unfolding. We can talk to him before he goes in, how they're defending us. And I think that has been good for him to sort of see it before he has to do it.
Mike DeGeorge, coach of the CMU men's basketball team. Mavericks head to Golden to take on Colorado School of Mines on Friday. Mines right now, Mike, they're 4-5 in conference play. They're 6-7 on the season. And when you look at what they're able to do the last time out, they got the win against the Hard Rockers of South Dakota Mines, 89-56. Brendan Sullivan, 23-point effort for the Ore Diggers in that one. So, as mentioned, they've struggled somewhat this season after, of course, they were, you went over to their place last year for the regional tournament, and they're able to win that and move on to the next round of the NCAA postseason. But they've had their struggles this year.
Yeah, you know, they have, you know, just in terms of skill and size and athleticism, just a really unique backcourt. And so those three are all back, and they've been a little inconsistent shooting the ball. Ben Boone's had just a tremendous year, but Brendan Sullivan and Kobe Betts have been a little inconsistent for them in the backcourt. And then they graduated their post play, and so they have some young guys that are emerging and developing, some really good players that are starting to develop. And they have game of the year, in my opinion, on Saturday against South Dakota Mines. They were firing all cylinders and looked really good. They really defended. They made shots. And Brendan Sullivan was himself. And so, you know, we're anticipating seeing, you know, what they're going to emerge into, I think, here, which is, you know, one of the top teams in the league down the stretch. And they got veterans and toughness. And so it's just a matter of time until they figured it out. And I think they're at that point. And then, obviously, they're going to be highly motivated. They did everything you could do last year except beat us. So it's going to be, you know, they're going to be ready to go, and it's going to be a huge challenge for us to go in there and win again.
And then on Saturday, it's the team that leads the RMAC right now, Regis, the nationally ranked Rangers, when you square off against them on Saturday. So, like you said, a Mines team that may be starting to figure some things out, and a Regis team that's played really, really well. And they've been led by a couple of guys, but most notably, Brian Dawson has had a really good start to the season.
Yeah, their year kind of reminds me of our year last year. They're just winning a lot of close games, and they're just really believing in themselves in late game situations and finding a way to survive games. But, you know, their nucleus is the same as last year, and, you know, we were very fortunate to beat them at home in overtime, and then we went over to their place last year and played better. But, you know, they have that same nucleus, just a year older and a year wiser, and they're really playing at a high level. And Dawson is just an elite scorer, and all three of their guards are very quick. They are undersized, but they can all score, and they play incredibly hard. So they really stretch you out and put a lot of pressure on you defensively, and then their defensive pressure is very disruptive to your offense. And so, you know, they're creating a lot of turnovers, have big advantage there, and they've just been finding ways to just make enough plays to win games.
Mike, appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Best of luck at Mines on Friday, and then, of course, at Regis on Saturday. We'll have coverage of the Maverick basketball games on the team Friday with both the men and women at Colorado School of Mines, and then Saturday, because of NFL playoff action, we'll move the Maverick games over to 1100 KNZZ. Mike, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, Mike DeGeorge, coach of the CMU men's basketball team.
All right. Yeah, that three-quarter court shot was insane from Tyre Randall just right in front of the Mavs bench, too. It just a dagger. It was
tough way to lose a basketball game. But yeah, right now in the standings for the men, you've got Regis, the number one team in the conference, undefeated so far, 13-1 overall, 8-0 in conference. Black Hill State, who the Mavericks handed them their only loss of the season, they're 8-1, 10-4 overall. Then the Mavericks are 8-3, 14-6. Metro State, who unfortunately the Mavericks lost to in that heartbreaking fashion on Friday. Metro State 6-3, they're 12-3 overall. Then Westminster 6-4, 8-8, and then Fort Lewis is 4-3 in conference, 8-5 overall. So still, it's a very competitive top half of the conference right now in the RMAC for the men. That's our show for today. Coming up next, Jim Rome. Don't forget, full court coverage. Fruita hosting Montrose. Grand Junction hosting Central. It starts at 5 o'clock tonight on the Team Sports Network.